day, it might be raining outside, but it's a lovely warm day in downtown Capernaum. Or at least we think it is. Because although this Bible story is important enough to be in all three synoptic gospels, that's Matthew, Mark, and Luke, synoptic meaning of one vision, they actually vary. But I think there's enough corroboration for us to say it probably was. And it's amazing how much contextual information is missing from these stories. Stuff that I think, you know, they're really pared down to the bare minimum. And I think the authors probably thought we could fill the gaps in. Of course, that was 2,000 years ago. And it's strange how we sort of accept that. We hear these stories time and time again and just accept them as they are. Never bother to question the fact that there were real people in these stories, in real places. You see, Jesus is coming back to Capernaum, because that's where he lives. He's living in a house with Simon Peter, one of his disciples. And it may even have been this house where the preaching took place. No, it may have been that Jesus was offered to go to a synagogue. I think it was probably he was offered to go to the house of a wealthy family who wanted to show off a little. Oh, yes, dear. Oh, that new firebrand preacher. Oh, you should hear what he's got to say about God. Oh, it's going to have all my neighbors' tongues wagging. You wait and see. Oh, it's going to be the social event of the season. I can't wait. Simply everyone's coming. Well, she wasn't wrong. Everyone did come, and his brother, and his uncle. And their cousins. The place is absolutely filled. They were all over the furniture. They were all over the floor. They were piled up on the armchairs. They were stuck in the window frames. They climbed up on the Welsh dresser. They were stood on the video cabinet. They were leaning in the hatchway from the breakfast bar. They filled the hallway all the way out and down into the street. The place was rammed. So, not a huge surprise then, when four geezers rock up with a paralyzed man on the mat. But they can't just walk in. Now, we don't actually know a great deal about this guy. The claim is that he's paralyzed, and we know for certain that he couldn't walk. But we don't know a lot else. So I think we're going to bring him alive a little bit, and we're going to give him a name. Let's call him Steve. Okay.
Steve, yeah. Diamond Geezer, yeah. Oh, I've known Steve for ages, yeah. That's a real shame what happened to him, yeah, yeah. That's why me and the fellas thought, you know, well, we'll take him to see this new preacher and get him healed, didn't it, you know? Yeah, sounded like a good idea at the time. We all started off with one hand on the corner of his mat, like, you know, sort of walking. All right, but you tend to forget how heavy our Steve is, you know what I mean? It's not very long before my wrist started, but then the elbow and then the shoulder was hurting, and then on my back. Oh, my back! Oh, I tell you, I once sorry. So all right, you know what I mean? Of course, you know, that could have gotten in, you know. See, the guy at the door isn't going to be the guy that owns the house. It's going to be one of his servants. Because after all, how did it look, darling? You know, think of these things. And if your livelihood depended upon what your master thought of you, well, you're going to do exactly what he tells you, aren't you?
Our master said to me, "No riffraff. And you are definitely riffraff. And so you are definitely not coming in. Now you can just wait over there. I'll go and have a word with the master and I'll see if the preacher will come out and talk to you afterwards. All right?"
That could have been it. That could have been where this story finished.
Sorry, Steve. Sorry, mate. Didn't really work out, did it? You know, oh no, don't cry, mate. Don't cry. It'll be okay. All right, Nathaniel, could you sort of stand in front of him a bit? Give him a shade, that's all.
See, you know, I'm portraying this in a sort of light-hearted, jokey way. I don't think it was anywhere near that familiar. I imagine there was a lot more pushing and shoving. I imagine there was swearing and maybe fisticuffs. The guys in the street there got involved. I'm willing to say that what actually happened was probably quite ugly. But we know, from the story, we know someone at some point must have mentioned about getting Steve onto the roof.
On a roof? What, Steve? Are you off your twat? Have you been out in the sun too long?
See, it's a bit of a shame, because I was hoping George would be here today. And you might or might not know this about George. George is a professional person. He's a porter for the NHS. And so he knows a thing or two about moving people who can't move themselves. See, the thing is, if you can't move yourself, your muscles hold the weight of your body. And if your muscles don't do that anymore, you're much harder to move around. It takes more than one person to move a person when they can't move themselves. It's tricky. You have to think about it. They have things called body boards, and you have rolling techniques. So to grab someone and take them onto a roof, well, that's quite something. You need to really think about that. But let me tell you about the roof as well, okay? Because it's not like the houses you have in England with a paint roof like that, with tiles on it. This would be a flat roof. The whole building would be made of mud bricks. And this roof would be a flat roof on top. And it was used a lot like you might use a patio or a conservatory. It was an extra space. People would do work there, like weaving or dyeing clothes or making things. And you get there by using the staircase built into the side of the building. Only about a person wide, no handrails or anything. So you can see straight away that although it wouldn't be impossible to get our main steam upstairs on the roof, not the first thing you'd choose to do. And it wouldn't be the easiest or the safest thing. You'd need to take a bit of care. And of course, even if you choose to do it, you've still got two problems left. The first problem, when you get up there, you've got to dig through the roof. You haven't got any tools. And the second problem, the guy that won't let you in the house isn't likely to let you on the roof, is he? But what about the guys inside? All of the nice neighbors. The old rabbi, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, all in their best bib and tuck, all round in like sardines. Well, they might have heard a bit of disturbance outside. They may even have heard people going up the stairs. But of course, once they're actually on the roof, oh, that's a different game altogether. Have you ever been in a caravan when a seagull's run across the roof? You've been in a conservatory when the rain's coming down. You know, it's like this. You can't hide that kind of sound. Can you imagine the scene? Everybody hanged in like this. And there it is, going across the roof. What's going to happen? It's human nature, isn't it? You're going to look up. What are you doing? That's another roof. For fucking sake, the preacher's talking. And there's someone on the roof. Oh, fuck you, you're embarrassing me. Everyone's here. There's someone on the roof. Shut up. Mrs. Greenmount's staring at you! How many times has social pressure gotten in the way of reality? How long do you think they can keep that up when they start actually digging through the roof above them? Because you know, sooner or later, bits of that roof are going to start coming in. It would start off as some dust to begin with. You might notice in the air, there would be little lumps and dead spiders and things like that. And then, construction of the roof, it was made from rush mats and branches. All of that would be coming down into the room where all the people are sat and nobody's got anywhere to go. And it would carry on. People would be dusting themselves off, trying to ignore, trying to focus on the preacher. Until eventually, bosh, daylight. You know it's going to happen. There'll be daylight coming in through a hole. And then you know there's going to be a face. Because, you know, if you're tunneling in, you want to be absolutely sure you're going into the right room. And there'll be a face looking down. And many faces looking up. Then there's going to be a conversation, isn't there? Morning. We're just here with our friend Steve. And, we won't be a moment. So if you read it in the story, they carry him up onto the roof, they make a hole, and they lower him down. And if you think it happened that quickly, you're deluding yourself. It probably would have taken a good 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes of agonizing, embarrassing digging before they had a hole big enough to actually lower our main steam down through. But we know from the story, we know they achieved it. We know that they got him down and laid him in front of Jesus. Job done. Why, of course. So what about Jesus? You know, it might be too much of a stretch to think that he could be a little bit miffed. Because there he is, doing what God's asked him to do, and
There are these four lunatics literally tunneling into his sermon and interrupting him. He could be upset. Well, that's the funny thing, because he doesn't appear to be upset. In fact, he doesn't even appear to be surprised. It's almost like he knew it was going to happen, and it was all part of God's plan. But I'm just going to take that thought and hang it up over there for a minute, because we're going to come back to that. So there's our old mate Steve, and he's there on the floor in front of Jesus. He's looking up at Jesus, and Jesus is looking down at him. Jesus welcomes him and says, "Son, your sins are forgiven." And if you could have been there, that moment, in that room, you would have heard the distinct sound of air being sucked in through people's teeth. "You can't say that, Jesus! That's not something you can do! You're not allowed to say things like that! There is only one person who can forgive sins, and that's God! You can't do that, Jesus!" Of course, nobody actually said that. They only thought it. But Jesus knew they were thinking. Well, that's an important point. I'm just going to be on the tree right now. I'll let my condo on that too. Because you see, in the rabbinical traditions of the day, knowing the thoughts of another person was one of the tests of being Messiah. And Jesus never ever claimed that he was Messiah. In fact, he would actively dissuade people from suggesting it. If you were to ask Jesus who he thought he was, he would tell you he was the Son of Man. Now, I did mention about having the book open, the Bible open at the back. Daniel, we're going to jump in now. Chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. This is a prophecy from the prophet Daniel, and it is who Jesus considers himself to be. I'll read it, you just follow along. "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. That is who Jesus is. Notice I didn't say was. Because you see, when Jesus forgave this person's sins, he is in effect saying to all the people in the room, "I am God." Which is quite likely to be the largest piece of blasphemy in the history of man. But unless, of course, you happen to be God. So we have this immense, fantastic, holy entity known as God. Far beyond anything we can realistically expect to understand. Far greater and more powerful and more holy and more wonderful than we'll ever really know. Like an ant staring at a skyscraper. We cannot take this in. An entity created a universe that we can barely get to grips with. Stars and galaxies on such vast a scale. And then teensy little subatomic particles. All of them in between, interacting and coalescing, creating and destroying. And then us, and the environment we live in, the intelligence we have, the emotions we have, the way we live, all created on the back of this fantastic, holy entity that we can barely get to grips with. And all of this, distilled into the humble body of a simple carpenter, that we may actually get to know God in some way, shape, or form. And there he is in this room. On that morning. And he challenges the people in that room to their thoughts, because they haven't yet said anything. And there's no introduction, there's no preamble. He says, "Why are you thinking this?" And straight away, they know, he knows what they're thinking. And to those people who are religiously trained, they know what that means. "Why are you thinking this?" Then Jesus asks them a
question. And you always need to be careful with Jesus and questions. It's a dangerous place to be. And he asked them, what is it easier to say? Your sins are forgiven. Or pick up your mat and walk. Well, in actual fact, it's not easy to say either of those things. Because you need to be God to do either of them. And unless you actually were God, you couldn't say either of those things. And you'll notice from this God, nobody actually answers that question. Nobody. Jesus tells them, I want you to know that the Son of Man, me, who is God incarnate, who is part of the Trinity that we worship, has the power to forgive sins in this world. He tells them, reinforcing that he is God. Not like God, not close to God, not in God's family. He is God. And then he does something else. He looks at the person that we've chosen this morning to call to speak, says to him, stand up, pick up your mat, and go on. And he does, to the absolute astonishment of everyone sat in that room. For the first time in years, he stands up, straightens himself, bends over, picks up his mat. And I imagine that would start dancing, because I know I would. Everybody is aghast. Everybody is shocked. People probably covering their faces. They may be screaming. They might be praising. They might be shouting. But they are shocked because they witnessed a miracle. Right in front of their eyes, right in that tiny little room where no one can look away, a miracle has occurred. In fact, three miracles. Because the first miracle, Jesus credibly reveals himself as God. Second miracle, Jesus heals this person spiritually. Now, Jesus never ever taught that all ailments are the cause of sin. He didn't teach that. But whenever people needed healing, he would always be there. And you notice that he quite often heals people spiritually before he heals them physically. And that's what he did on this occasion. And there's a lesson there for us, because there are plenty of people wandering around our planet who want spiritual healing, actively looking for it. And then the third miracle, he actually heals this person physically. And let's not mess about. This is serious. This involves the realignment of bones, the moving of muscles, the realignment of tissues and tendons, blood vessels. This is something which we're talking about months and months of recuperation and healing and hospitalization, all achieved in a few simple words. Three miracles have occurred, and this person is skipping home as happy as a sandal. There's something else. Because in this skinny, head down, bare bones narrative, Jesus actually tells this person, I tell you, pick up your mat. What is it about the mat? Do you think he wanted him to tidy up? In a room full of dirt and debris and broken branches? No, I don't think it's about tidying up. I think he wanted to take that mat home so that there would be tangible memory of that event. I think he wanted him to keep that mat so that every time he looked at it, he would remember where he came from. It would keep him humble. And every time, I imagine he kept that mat for years. He may have passed it on as a family heirloom and took the thread there. But every time he looked at that mat, he would have seen the face of the person that he met on that day, who really was the person that he claimed to be. That is just one reason why we should worship him. Of course, there could have been four miracles. He might have repaired the gun's rift. But we'll never know about that, because it's not in this one. Amen.